It's the Nightcap here on VSiN. I'm Jeff Barles. He's Matt Holt. A no-hitter in baseball.
Yeah, it should have been a perfect game.
Very close to being a perfect game for Carlos Rodon of the Chicago White Sox. He no-hits the Cleveland Indians. 8-0 the final. 27 outs on 28 batters, I should say. I wanted to say 28 up, 27 down. And the only one to reach base was Roberto Perez on a curveball that just snapped too much. Hit him in the foot.
On an 0-2 count. Yeah. Just terrible. Oh, man, that was tough.
Just brutal luck more than anything for Rodon, who, again, this is what a path for Carlos Rodon, who has had multiple surgeries, was DFA'd this offseason as well, Matt, and brought back to the White Sox. And Rodon completes it. 7 Ks, no walks, no strikeout, or excuse me, 7 Ks, no walks, no hits, obviously, and a hit by pitch. That's it. For Carlos Rodon to complete the 20th no-hitter in the history of the White Sox, which is pretty amazing that the White Sox have thrown 20 no-hitters.
20, yes.
Yeah. So 8-0 the final for that one. Matt, other things as well with this. This is the closest differential between no-hitters since 2012, May 3rd to May 7th. It was Francisco Liriano who threw the one on the 3rd.
Liriano.
And that Verlander guy who's pretty good threw one of his on May 7th, 2012. 2012 obviously was a great no-hitter and perfect game year for whatever reason, Matt. Again, Rodon would have been the first to throw a perfect since 2012 when Felix Hernandez threw a perfect game on August the 15th against the Tampa Bay Rays. Again, there have been 21 perfect games ever. Oh, I've actually been misspeaking. 21 perfect games ever. Rodon would have been the 22nd, not the 23rd. 21 ever, and three of them came in the same season.
And none since.
And none since.
Three in a season and none since, and we were one bad curveball away from having one tonight.
And the other fun one with perfect games, 2010 was the previous season before the trio. There were 2 in 20 days in 2010. Dallas Braden on Mother's Day, and then Roy Halladay came back and perfected the Marlins 20 days later.
Boy, Halladay was good that year.
Rest in peace, Roy Halladay, one of the greatest pitchers I've ever watched.
Yeah.
So good. And obviously had the no-hitter in the playoffs as well against the Cincinnati Reds. That was also in 2010 as well, that no-hitter. Halladay threw 2 in 1 year, the perfect game and the no-hitter. That guy was really good.
Yeah.
That guy was so good. Kurt Heelan will be with us in about 2 minutes from now, so stay tuned. He, of course, writes for NBC Sports, covers the NBA. We have a lot to get to in the NBA, as we discussed earlier. We can, Matt, are you going to get his thoughts on the nice implosion by the Detroit Pistons tonight?
No, I'm more interested in the Western Conference, where I think the Phoenix Suns continue to be massively undervalued in the betting market, getting no love in the betting market whatsoever. But to your point, if you were a Lakers backer, boy, you feel so much better after Monday. You hate to ever see that stuff happen, but I think you like your path a lot better.
Yes, the path for the Lakers, as we talked about a lot early in the show, and we're going to continue with Curtin a few minutes here on that. Just, again, that path just becomes significantly easier.
And I want to get his thoughts on the Boston Celtics, who are suddenly red hot. And if they get back up into the 4 seed here, they're definitely going to be a favorite over the Hawks, probably be a favorite over the Heat. Could they be a potential scary matchup for Brooklyn or Philly in round 2?
By the way, speaking of the Denver Nuggets, they're in control against Miami tonight, 60-49. So far, and of course, I didn't bet it because, you know, I'm better with saying do things.
Look,
and not
that Miami loss tonight would drop them into the 7 seed. They'd suddenly be back in that, play-in situation.
It's been a big Michael Porter Jr. night for
Michael
Denver.
Porter Jr.
7 of 8 from the field and 17 for the product out of Missouri. It's 60-49 at the break. Denver shooting a nice 62% from the field so far, man.
Wow.
So an electric shooting night so far for the Denver Nuggets. Again, first game without Jamal Murray after his torn ACL earlier this week against Golden State. More on the flip side here on the Nightcap. Kurt Heelan of NBC Sports joins us momentarily. It's the nightcap here on VSiN. I'm Jeff Parles. Matt Holt to my left. Matt, we were very nice being back on the desk with you.
It's been a long time,
14 months or so since you and I were on the desk together. The week after the Super Bowl was the last time.
Yeah.
The Chief 49ers Super Bowl, which honestly feels like it might as well have been 14 years ago at this point.
I know, and that was such a great Super Bowl.
It was.
Yeah.
Really good. It was a great gambling Super Bowl for me. That's all I know. It was much better than this year, which was just a fiasco for me in every respect. With Tampa, of course, winning their second Super Bowl in franchise history, and Tom Brady just continuing his dominance of winning Super Bowl after Super Bowl, regardless of where he is now.
Yeah.
So we'll have Curt Heelan in a few moments here, Matt, but let's quickly go around the association here.
You know what's interesting is we kind of rag on Carlos Rodon tonight that he missed the perfect game by throwing that curveball, but he has to give a lot of props to Jose Abreu, who saved his no-hitter in the ninth.
Well, that was the moment where I thought, okay, this is going to be a perfect game. That was this version's Dwayne Wise. Again, Dwayne Wise's catch a lot better than Abreu's play, but Abreu's play was really difficult. Because
Carlos Rodon didn't get off the mound.
He had no chance of getting over. Aaron, we have Curt. We have Curt Heelan
of
NBC Sports right now. He covers the association for them. Curt, how you doing tonight? Jeff Parles and Matt Holt here on the nightcap.
How you doing, guys? I'm doing well. Thanks.
It's good to have you on. And let's just start with the Denver Nuggets. Of course, tonight, right now, up 11 on Miami. Jamal Murray's really just sad injury to see earlier in the week, tearing his ACL against Golden State. Obviously, this probably ends Denver's hopes at making a run in the Western Conference Final. But what do you take away from what the Nuggets have done tonight without Murray, and just what it has to be going forward if they're gonna be able to make a run in the playoffs without Jamal?
Look, they're still a good team, right? Like, this has still got the, you know, front runner for MVP and Nikola Jokic out front. It's still got the athleticism of Michael Porter Jr. It's still got a lot going for it. This is a team that plays well within its system and got, you know, Aaron Gordon's there and has played, you know, can take on some more scoring load. He certainly used to have to do that in Orlando. It knocks them down from the, I thought they were contenders. I thought that they weren't the favorites, but I thought they had a legitimate shot at this, you know, going into the playoffs. They were a team you had to consider, to a team now where you're like, yeah, all right, we get to the second round of the playoffs, and I'm just not sure how they advance. I don't know what they can do without Jamal Murray. And the real problem, I think, for them ultimately is, guys, this is an ACL, right? This is 12 months, but I mean, you talk to guys who've had that injury, and they talk about a year and a half before they fully trust it again, right? Before they can make the cuts and make the plays and the leaps without thinking about it or without it subconsciously kind of slowing them, that dings them next year heavily. And it's just that's a tough spot to be in.
You know, one of the teams that I think you could say was probably the most disappointing team maybe this season going into the All-Star break, the Boston Celtics, have suddenly won 4 in a row, 6 of 7. They're back in the 5 seed. They're only one game behind the Atlanta Hawks for the 4 seed in the East. Are the Boston Celtics for real? Did they finally start to figure it out with this lineup? I mean, they're finally healthy for the first time all year. You know, what do we make of the Boston Celtics and their run all of a sudden?
Yeah, is it okay if I'm still a little hesitant on them? Because I'm still not totally, at the highest level, I'm not sure what their identity is, but I think that of late what they have gotten on, like you said, A, they've just been healthy, which helps. Their defense has been a little better, but also, and Kemba Walker really struggled. He missed a bunch of time at the start of the year and has just not been himself. He's had really nice games. He's been kind of, was it 29 or 21, 8-7, I think it was last night. He's kind of back to being a guy who can get you buckets and grind a little bit. And they've been getting, you know, Marcus Smart being Marcus Smart. There's a lot of things still going for them. I still just, even if all that clicks, doesn't it feel like they're a piece away from challenging somebody like Brooklyn or Philadelphia?
It does, but I think it's an interesting matchup. In the second round, you know, whether it's Brooklyn or Philadelphia, I think the way Boston's playing now, at least it makes it a much more interesting second round matchup.
Yeah, it's probably Philadelphia, right? They win tonight. They move in front of Brooklyn, but they also have, I mean, barring injury or something, they have a way softer schedule the rest of the way than Brooklyn does. And plus, Brooklyn every night is pretty much like walk up to the slot machine, pull the arm, and see what pops up. Who do we get tonight? So, you know, with that randomness, I feel like Philly's going to get the one, and you want the one because you want to force Milwaukee and Brooklyn to play each other, right, in the second round. So you'll probably get that four seed, and it's probably Miami or Boston. And Philly should beat them, but both of those teams put a little bit of fear in you, right?
Yeah, I absolutely.
Yeah.
I would agree on that. Kurt Heelan of NBCSports.com, the lead NBA writer and managing editor over there. Get him on the tweets at Basketball Talk. That's easy enough to remember, one of the best handles out there. And Kurt was lucky enough to snag that back in the day. Kurt, I want to shift back to the West real quick, because the Phoenix Suns currently sit as the second best team in the conference. They're the fourth highest odds to come out of the conference at 9-1. The Clippers, the Lakers, and Utah are all shorter. Kurt, when do we reach the point where we have to get in our minds, hey, this Phoenix team is not only a contender to come out of the West, but they're a legitimate NBA championship contender?
I got a feeling they're going to have to prove that in the postseason, right? Because I will tell you, not only the bettors and the odds makers are not the only people thinking that, or a little hesitant. No question, a good team, right? No question. They've still got Chris Paul. This is still an elite team. But I'll tell you, when you talk to other teams about thinking about playoff matchups and, hey, what if the Lakers fall to six and how do we avoid them and all this, nobody really is scared of Phoenix, because Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton and Bridges and on down the line there have never been in a playoff game. This franchise hasn't really had to do it. And the other thing that's going, they've got the Portland problem, which is they've got a really nice look. Booker and Chris Paul is in a very, very good backcourt. It's not terribly tall. And it feels like when you get to the second round and beyond, there are people who can exploit that. So I'll just say that there's a lot of teams who would love to be the seven. If they're the two, would love to be the seven. We'll see if the Clippers pass them or what happens the rest of the season. But they're not striking fear in anyone right now. And I think if they're going to truly be contenders, they're going to have to prove it in the playoffs that they're that good.
You know, most of the awards this year and the betting on the awards feels pretty wrapped up. I mean, who's going to beat Jokic for the MVP at this point? And he's minus 300. Edwards is a big favorite to win Rookie of the Year, kind of by default.
Really?
This year, because his efficiency numbers aren't so good.
Yeah, go ahead, Kurt.
Wait. Edwards is the favorite for Rookie of the Year?
Yeah. Really?
Yes.
In front of Alonzo?
Yeah,
in front of Alonzo. He should be in front of Alonzo, but in front of LaMelo?
Well, it's Kurt, because of how few games of LaMelo will appear.
I don't know. I do not know about that one.
Matt, finish your question, and I guess
That's an interesting one we could talk about as well. But I think the one race that does still feel open this year is Coach of the Year, whether it's Quinn Snyder for the Utah Jazz, Monty Williams for the Phoenix Suns, or Doc Rivers for the 76ers, and that feels like the one wide-open race for awards. Who do you think inevitably gets Coach of the Year? And then I'd love to hear your opinion on Rookie of the Year, because according to the odds, it's Edwards.
We'll start with Coach of the Year. That's the one. That's one that almost every year keeps me up at night, man. I struggle with my vote on that one. It is a difficult thing to judge from the outside and to feel. It's one I talk to scouts more about and people, just because, you know, is it? Let's put it this way. Yeah. You mentioned, I don't know, did you mention Doc Rivers? Because Doc Rivers should absolutely be in that conversation. He has done a fantastic job. Daryl Morey came in and made a roster fit better. Like, hey, let's add some shooting to this roster to space out the floor. Crazy idea. So, like, how much of that is Doc? How much of that is just better roster construction? And how much of this? The other name you didn't mention, by the way, Tom Thibodeau. I know they're going to finish 8th, 9th, somewhere in there. he helped turn the culture of that team around right now. That team defends like you wouldn't expect, and they're playing hard. It's a tough one. If you made me guess, I think Quinn's going to get it. Quinn Snyder will get it. kind of, I don't, I guess I'll call it the semi-lifetime achievement award. It's not really lifetime, but in the sense that what he's done to put Utah here, he's done a fantastic job this year. It's helped that, you know, Mike Conley's been helping him back to being Mike Conley. But I mean, that's a, how long have they been building that up to this? Like 4 years? Like, hey, we got to, you know, build up Rudy Gobert and we've got to make this work. And they've bought in, got everybody to buy into the system. So it's a little bit of a lifetime achievement, but I got a feeling he wins it.
Kurt Heelan with us right now here on a nightcap. Kurt, of course, the lead NBA writer for NBCSports.com. Kurt, I want to shift back. Well, actually, you didn't give your thoughts on the rookie of the year real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Because right now at DraftKings, Kurt, Anthony Edwards is minus 125. Halliburton is actually the second favorite at plus 150. And then LaMelo's at 2-1.
I'll just say a lot of voters I know think LaMelo's done enough over. I know he's missing a chunk of time and Edwards is coming on at the end. But Edwards has not been terribly efficient, had a rough, like you said, much rougher start to the season. Halliburton, by the way, people are sleep. Nobody, I would say people are sleeping on how good he is because seriously, who wants to watch Sacramento basketball?
Right.
It's you know, I get paid to watch basketball and I'm not sure I want to watch a lot of Sacramento basketball. But I'll just say it's something I haven't sat down. I have to figure out the percentage, but this isn't Embiid playing 31 games, like less than half the games. It's going to be I think it works out to 55-56% of the games LaMelo's played. That may be enough. I'm telling you, I think a lot of voters are still going to pick him because he was so clearly the best and played in over half the games.
He's right in the line. The historical pretense to LaMelo winning would be we go back to the mid-80s, Kurt, and Patrick Ewing when he played in 52 out of 82. That would be the closest thing we've seen to someone winning this award with the percentage of games that LaMelo has played, Kurt.
Yeah, I think it could happen. I think it's going to be a little close. Like you said, Edwards has played, he said he had a rough start to the season. He's played fantastic of late. He's finally kind of been aggressive. He's more, his efficiency numbers are better. Probably not completely where you want them, but better. And Halliburton is going to be second or maybe third on everybody's ballot. But I don't think he's going to win it. I'll say this. LaMelo is the guy who contributes to winning. Just flat out contributes to his team winning games when he's on the floor, aside the it factor and everything else he's got going for him. We'll see how much the missed time holds him back.
Kurt Heelan of NBCSports.com, lead NBA writer with us here on the nightcap. Kurt, we have about 2 minutes here. I want to ask you, I want to get back to the Western Conference real quick, because obviously the Lakers, they're going to get LeBron back, they're going to get AD back, so they're going to be healthy going into this postseason. Who's the one team out West that can keep them from the playoffs? Who is the biggest threat? Or from the finals, I should say. From the finals.
Yeah. As much as I like Utah and would like to root for Utah, it's the Clippers. They've been playing better lately. Paul George has been going through the toe, better through the toe issue. He's missed a lot of time. I don't think anyone questions what Kawhi Leonard can do. Yes, they're the Clippers, so there's a certain historical, are you kidding me, factor going on here. But at the end of the day, that is the team a lot of us were on last year and were let down. But it's still a team, and they've been inconsistent this year. It's still a team on paper that just two elite wings, smart coach, plays defense, made an upgrade at the trade deadline. I everything they're doing, I kind of like. So that's the one team they've got. They've won six in a row now? Six, I think. Even again with guys in and out of the lineup, they get Serge Ibaka back. I just like the way they're built. I just think that's the one team that could come together and be the best frankly, win the whole thing.
He's Kurt Heelan. Get him on the tweets at Basketball Talk. One of the best handles.
It's a good one.
Is on Twitter. Of course, find his work as well as NBCSports.com. Kurt, thank you for being with us tonight.
Anytime, man. Take care.
Thanks, Kurt.
It was good to talk to Kurt. And the most actionable thing that came out of that conversation, man, I saw you looking on your phone there, is the LaMelo Ball thing.
Yeah.
By far, because...
Well, I like to hear it from people that have a vote.
Right. And again, Kurt, it's well-connected as anyone in the entire in the entire industry. That's by far the most actionable thing here, because if there is a sect of voters that thinks LaMelo played enough games to win the award, where, again, he's going
to... And he was a runaway prior to getting hurt.
You were laying $6?
More.
$7?
It was like minus $1,000.
Yeah, I mean, you're laying a huge price before he got hurt, Matt. And look, Anthony Edwards had a nice second half of the season. I'm with Kurt. Especially with it looking like the Hornets are going to... The Hornets were a top five team in the Eastern Conference with LaMelo. They're going to be in the play-in game. They might even be in the 9-10 play-in where it's one and done. So I would look, if LaMelo wins this award, I have no problem with that. And quite frankly, when he played, he was by far the best rookie in the league.
Yes, by far.
So I have no issue if he wins it, even with only playing, again, a little bit more than 50% of the total games to be played this season. We're going to update you on what's going on in the NBA, in Memphis especially. That's next here on the Nightcap. Welcome back. It is the Nightcap here on VSiN. I'm Jeff Parles in for Tim Murray. Matt Holt in his usual chair.
Some good games coming down to the wire here.
Yes. Before we get to that, of course, the news of the night. We have our second no-hitter to Major League Baseball season.
Yeah.
Carlos Rodon. Come on down.
Every time you host this show, right?
This is now two straight shows where a no-hitter's been thrown, where I've been on the desk here for the Nightcap.
That's pretty impressive.
Again, the last.
If it happens a third night in a row, whoa, something's up.
Wow. Again, this is karma. Last Friday night, when Musgrove threw the no hitter, and Tim Murray asked me the question that is a question that dooms me forever: of Have you ever been to a no hitter or a perfect game? Where I'll rehash the story real quick. I was 6 years old. I was scared of lightning. It was Yogi Berra Day at Yankee Stadium, and there was a 30-some-odd minute rain delay with lightning, and I made my dad and I leave because I was scared of lightning as a six-year-old, and David Cone promptly threw a perfect game.
Nice.
So, I, again, it would make sense that I'm on the air during all these, but never at one of them. That's probably what is going to be the karma for that, which, again, we don't need to rehash that any further than we just did. But Rodon throws a no-hitter against Cleveland. Cleveland's offense is anemic, but a great job by Rodon, and it was oh so close to being a perfecto. 25 up, 25 down. Curveball on an 0-2 pitch to Roberto Perez that just broke too much and hit Perez in the foot.
Oh, man, what a bummer that was. Right after Jose Abreu made a great play to save the no-hitter.
Yes, a spectacular play on a squibber off the bat of Josh Naylor. And Naylor actually beat Abreu to the bag, but went head for a slide and actually touched the bag with the backhand instead of the front hand.
Yeah.
He would have been safe if he touched it with the front hand. It was very bizarre, but
it was.
But in the end, Rodon gets a ground ball to get his no-hitter. 8-0 White Sox win. They cash as a small favorite, and the total goes over by a half thanks to the White Sox by themselves.
I know poor Dustin May, who's having himself a heck of a night here, you know, a shutout so far through 3 2/3. It's going to get completely overshadowed by the no-no tonight.
Yeah, there are a few good pitching performances today, which Joe Ross again.
Dustin excellent. Mays yet to allow a run this year. Well, this is third start of the season.
The Dodgers' fifth starter is better than a lot of people's number two. So, I mean, they're just the embarrassment of riches for that team.
Yes.
With, again, legitimate major league starters pitching out of the bullpen like David Price and Tony Gonsolin.
Right now.
I just sick how good they are, Matt. It really is. We'll get actually a little more into baseball in the next segment because someone has started the season in a historic way in the National League, and the Cy Young, again, still probably Jacob DeGrom's to lose, even if Jacob DeGrom goes 0-10 because the Mets don't score from him. But someone on the Brewers is off to a ridiculous start, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But Matt, the association, you had one bet last night that you gave out. And as of right now, with 9 minutes to go, Memphis leads Dallas as a 3.5-point home dog, 91-89.
Yeah, it's hanging in there. So far, so good for the Memphis Grizzlies. And this is the pace we wanted in this game. We didn't want this game played in the 120s. We certainly wanted it played in the around the 110 kind of range, and that's what it's been so far. Memphis has been able to defend the perimeter, and here they go. This Dallas team continues to be a little overrated compared to what they actually are, just because of Luka Doncic and kind of the publicity that comes with that squad.
They are. Hey, look, I took a little piece of them when I was still on the East Coast. I took a small piece of them at 20-1 to win the West on a free bet. Use it or lose it on the futures market. So I took them, and they have no chance to come out of the West. And
no, you are right.
You are right. They are a little bit overvalued because of how good Luka is.
Yes.
And there's no end look. Luka's a legitimate top five player in the league. There's no.
But he's also complaining lately. He's starting to get in on the excuse train.
The big thing, and you mentioned this earlier in the show, and part of your handicap was Mark Cuban came out the other day and said, it's ridiculous we're doing this play-in thing. Why did he do that? Because they're sitting in the seventh spot.
And Luka was complaining about it.
Yeah, right. Cuban was the louder one of the two.
Yeah, of course. Well, he had to defend his guy.
Right. But look, I think in the end, Dallas, they are what they are. Dallas just took the lead, by the way. J.J. Redick with the three-pointer. Memphis just took the lead right back. You'll see it on your television screen in a few seconds.
Yes.
With that 93-92, I should say, Memphis in front.
Yeah.
7:45 to go in the fourth quarter. Other NBA games going right now. Denver in control against Miami, up by 9 at 77-68 with 6:40 to go, Matt. And the only other game going, Aaron Oster's Washington Wizards leading by 12 against Sacramento, 76-64 with 9 minutes to go in the third quarter. We have an NL Cy Young discussion.
Okay.
Because Corbin Burns did something today that hasn't been done in a long time. That's next here on VSiN's Nightcap. Spring sports betting action is just getting started, and our experts here at VSiN are covering every early season baseball trend, the NHL and NBA playoff races. Plus, we're looking at all the key picks and predictions for the NFL draft just 2 weeks from tomorrow.
We'll have 2 weeks?
Incredible. Looking forward to that. We'll give you all the tools you need to make the most of every bet, including our 24/7 video coverage, odds and analysis for every game on VSiN.com. Our daily members-only best bet email, and in-depth coverage of every major event in point spread weekly. The weather and the betting action is heating up. Now's the time to sign up for your VSiN 10-day free trial at VSiN.com/subscribe. I'm Jeff Parles. He's Matt Holt. The show's The Nightcap. Happy to be with you. Shout out to the crew, as always, Aaron Oster, the producer of this show, keeping us somewhat in line, doing his best.
Yeah.
Matt, let's go to Major League Baseball here, because Corbin Burns of the Milwaukee Brewers, he's pretty good at this baseball thing, Matt.
He seems to be, yeah.
So Corbin Burns today, Brewers, by the way, is a favorite, and they were steamed big time today. It was low as -136 early in the day, close -160 in the consensus odds. 7-0 final against the Cubs, who the Cubs just might be bad. That might just be the case for the Cubs. They just might not be.
Yeah, they're not that good this year, but I don't know they're terrible either.
So Corbin Burns, though, again, this guy's pretty good. Matt, here are some historic stats from Burns. Okay, Burns over 6 innings today against the Cubs, 10 Ks, no walks, 2 hits, retiring the last 10 men he faced. Matt, Burns is the first pitcher. The only guy, first and only guy since 1901. We're talking 120 years ago, Matt.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Pre-World Series. To string together three consecutive outings of six innings or more and two or fewer base runners.
That's a good start.
Pretty good start. Burns, by the way, leads Major League qualifiers right now with a strikeout rate of 48.5%.
Wow.
Which is ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Usually see league leaders in the mid-30s, and those are, and that's a high number. ERA of a half a run. Not bad.
Not bad. Not quite Dustin May, but not bad.
Not bad. Opponent's average is 0.67. Burns has 30 strikeouts and three starts and no walks allowed so far.
That part of it's unbelievable.
The only pitcher since the modern era began 1920 years ago, 1901, to do it in the first three outings. Again, if Burns keeps this going, he'll be in record territory, according to Elias, which again goes back to 1893. Adam Wainwright sets the mark for a starting pitcher with 35 strikeouts before issuing his first walk of the season. That happened in 2013.
So one more start from Burns.
One more start from Burns with no walks, he's going to do it.
Yeah.
So this begs the question of, how is any of this actionable, Jeff? Well, I'm happy you asked. Let's go to some odds from the Westgate. Jacob deGrom is still the rightful favorite as the Cy Young Award winner in the NL, even though the Mets have decided that they're not going to play offense when he plays, or their bullpen, or when he pitches, or when their bullpen decides not to show up. Whatever it is, befells DeGrom. The Mets are 0-2 in his starts, despite the fact that DeGrom has an ERA of 0.64 so far. He's 2-1. Bueller 6-1. Bowers 8-1. Aaron Nola, I'm surprised, is still at 10-1, even though he's had two rocky starts. Flaherty at 12-1, and then the two Brewers, Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff at 12-1. Burns was as high as 40-1, Matt. That was the highest number I saw.
Yeah.
It was bet down pretty significantly during the offseason. It was mostly 20-1 when the season started.
What about Dustin May? You got him on that list?
I don't have Dustin May on that list. I don't want to bet Dustin May.
All right.
Number five starter for the Dodgers isn't winning.
Well, he just hasn't given up a run yet this year.
But Matt, at 12-1 on Corbin Burns, I still think there's some value at 12-1, even though you missed the boat on the best numbers.
Could be. Some of those flamethrowers I worry about are arm injuries and stuff, but certainly right now, 12-1 still feels good, actually. I think there's probably still a little value there.
Yeah, I still think DeGrom wins the award.
Probably.
Even though he legitimately might go 5-6. legitimately might go 5-6 with a 1-2 ERA or something ridiculous like that, but Corbin Burns' start, and again, he's getting more coverage today than I would have expected for a dude who's pitching in Milwaukee, which in all honesty, it should be. He's been that ridiculously good, as I outlined there. But 12-1 still feels short. There's a lot of 8-1 on the East Coast, by the way, right now, Matt.
The good news for him, though, and the reason I think there is some value at 12-1 is, right now, they're probably the favorite to win that division.
Them in St. Louis.
They're ahead of St. Louis by a game right now. And you have to like the fact that they're plus 14 run differential so far. St. Louis has a minus run differential. And you assume at some point the Reds' bats will cool down. And, their pitching hasn't been very good. So they'll start losing games. So, yeah, maybe 12-1 is a good value.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable at 12-1.
Who has that up at 12?
That's Westgate.
Okay.
On the AL side, Gerrit Cole actually has gone up from plus 250 to plus 300 after that ridiculous nothing game into the 10th last night and your hellacious beat on White Sox plus 1.5.
Ugh.
So Bieber and Giolito both are now at 4-1.
And they're both going to be in the running.
Yeah.
They're both really good.
So you know who on that board I kind of like at that number, and it's not the number was about 30 before the season here at Circa, but it's still at 20 at Westgate. It's Hyunjin Ryu.
Yeah.
If the Blue Jays hang in the race, which is definitely possible.
Sure.
And more than enough young talent to hang in this thing. Ryu's been really good over his first three starts. He beat the Yankees last night, pitched pretty well on opening day, was a tough luck loser in game two against the Rangers when the Blue Jays just didn't score for him. In a race in the AL where unless Gerrit Cole just is completely unhittable, which is obviously more than possible, he's been really darn good so far.
But he's always been a super high strikeout guy.
He gives up homers.
Yes.
Gives up homers. Glasnow at 3-1. I don't think Glasnow. I know Glasnow had a huge outing earlier in the week. Glasnow should not be co-favored with Cole. He just
he's good though.
I'm not disagreeing with that, Matt. But he shouldn't be the co-favored with Cole. So I'm interested to see how that market moves. It's also pretty funny that Zach Greinke's 40-1. Corey Kluber, who couldn't get anyone out today, is 50-1.
Yeah. Corey Kluber, I don't want. I wouldn't bet that. At 100-1.
I wouldn't bet it at 1,000. He's not. Winning, yeah. He's not winning the Cy Young.
No.
No way. He's a fade list right now.
Yeah. For
that's just
sure.
what he is right. Yeah. Now. He's a fade. You fade Corey Kluber right now. Kind of amazing. That's what Corey Kluber's turned into in his career. But all right.
I'm looking to play a little Dustin May. I actually like Glasnow. I'm kind of on the opposite side as you. Boy, I think he's good.
Co-favorite though.
I know that's steep. You're not getting any value or any love there.
I wouldn't bet either of those
guys.
He's
so
right now.
Big, and he's just phew.
When we get back, the number 3 pick,
okay,
maybe Justin Fields. We're going to discuss where we think Fields is going to land next here on the Nightcap. When you're hiring, there's no luxury of time. So instead of waiting for people to see your sponsored post, invite them to apply. More at indeed.com/credit. I'm Jeff Parles, Matt Holt alongside. Happy to be with you here on a Wednesday night. I nearly said Friday. I have no idea what day it is anymore. I have no clue. Hey, it's Wednesday night, though. Carlos Rodon threw no hitter. That I do know.
Yeah.
And I do know. 5 days after Joe Musgrove last
Dustin
Friday.
Dustin May still hasn't given up a run.
Yes. I think if I'm ever in for Tim again when you and I are on the desk together, Dustin May has to pitch every single day.
Yes, every time.
This is the one guy who you absolutely
Brian
love.
Reynolds.
There you go, Brian Reynolds.
It's on my fantasy team.
I knew
team
it was something
year.
Ridiculous. I just couldn't think of who it was from that 2019 August and September. But Dustin May does have 6 strikeouts tonight as the Dodgers lead the Rockies 6-0 as they play in the top of the 5th inning at Dodger Stadium. But as we teased during the break, Justin Fields, guy was pretty good at Ohio State. Got to the national
championship. But Ohio State quarterbacks don't have a good recent history in the NFL.
Well, shout out Mr. Haskins, who's now a backup.
Miller, maybe, Haskins.
Maybe even a third stringer.
Cardale Jones.
Cardale Jones should have went out after the run to the title and then came back, really was okay at Ohio State, and then career backup. And last time we saw him was with our DC Defenders.
Yep.
In the XFL. Full circle, here we go. But let's look at the odds for Justin Fields here. From DraftKings. For reference here, 5 of the major mock drafts. So Mel Kiper, obviously one of the most well-known guys there is, has been doing it for eons at this point. The Patriots, trading up to 10 to get Justin Fields. His ESPN comrade, Todd McShay. New England, trading up to 11 to take Justin Fields. Dane Brugler, now with The Athletic. Denver, at number 9. DJ, Daniel Jeremiah, with NFL.com. The Lions. See, someone is thinking the same thing as me.
Yeah.
The Lions at 7. And then Trevor Sikkema of the Draft Network has him going 3 to San Francisco.
And most people don't have him going 3 anymore. I mean, there was a lot of talk, and I know Tim was even still on it Monday, about Fields going number 3. That seems all but dead at this point.
So let's go to the odds. Oh, well, there's the number 3 overall pick odds from DraftKings on your screen. It's going to be Mac Jones. It's just going to be Mac Jones.
Yes.
We can argue for days on end if it's the right move or not. It's not the right move. But that's what it's going to be.
Well, it's a low ceiling move, but
I would still take Fields. I'd even actually like it more if they took Lance. And I have no idea what Trey Lance is going to be. No clue. I don't know what he's going to be. But again, they're not going to go non-quarterback there at number three for the Niners, which brings us to the DraftKings odds for where Justin Fields will land, which means the favorite as of right now is the 49ers. You and I both in a camp that it's going to be Mac Jones at number three to San Francisco. Yeah. So we get to go down the board here. The Falcons, who currently hold number four at 3-1. The Broncos, the Patriots both at 5. Washington at 6-1. Lions at 10-1. The Panthers at 11-1. That's not going to happen now. No. The Bears at 12-1. Unlikely they'd really have to move up. The Jets at 16-1. Not going to happen. They're going to take Zach Wilson. To my despair, they're going to take Zach Wilson at 2. The Saints at 25-1. The Eagles at 25-1. And Pittsburgh at 25-1. None of those teams are going to happen. Matt, I would bet the Detroit Lions at 10-1. That would be the only thing I would bet here. I don't think anything else is proper value.
No.
Because San Francisco, in my opinion, should be...
Denver likes Trey Lance a lot. That's the word there.
It should be a cluster of teams at about 3-1.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone should be a favorite like San Francisco is.
And I'm looking at those, and I just can't find one I want to jump on.
No, it's tough.
And it probably is going to be one of those teams that inevitably ends up with them, but I just don't feel confident enough in any of them to actually place a wager.
No, it would be Detroit. That would be the one, because let's give the rationale for the Lions. It's a new head coach.
Yep.
Who's a first-time head coach. I know he was the interim after Philbin got fired in Miami. I understand that. But first time Dan Campbell's been the man anywhere.
Yeah.
Jared Goff, he's not the future. Jared Goff is not a long-term answer at this point. We know what Jared Goff is. And if Sean McVay thinks you're unfixable, you're probably not fixable.
That's right.
So if you're Detroit, you're not going anywhere this year anyway. You're going to be bad. I'm okay with taking the quarterback here, letting Goff start, letting Fields learn the game from the bench.
Because I think he could use a year, or at least a half a year on the bench.
Well, that's why San Francisco, to me, and it's crazy to me that Mac Jones will be the pick there. Fields in San Francisco is just, to me, the perfect match. Because you have a guy in Jimmy Garoppolo who's going to start this year.
Maybe.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. If they're doing it correctly, what is anyone going to offer for Garoppolo at this point?
I don't know.
Not much of anything good. Jimmy G gives you a better chance to win over either of the rookies, at least right now, regardless of who it is.
Agreed.
And the Niners were so befallen by injuries last year, 6-10, with basically every key player missing a portion of time at a minimum last year. But that's the scenario where, if I'm going with what I would do at 3, I wouldn't even think twice I would take Fields. Because the ceiling for Fields is so much higher than Mac Jones' ceiling. Mac Jones can be an okay starting quarterback, Matt, but he's not going to be an elite starter, Pro Bowler type like I think Fields has the potential to be. Now I think Jones' floor is higher than Fields.
Yes.
And for me, Jones has the second highest floor of any of these guys in this draft. Lawrence is the only guy who has the shorter floor. Trevor Lawrence, worst case scenario to me, is that he is a league average starter for double digits years.
Yeah.
I don't see him being a complete bust. I'm not sure if he's the superstar Cam Mist that everyone says he is. But to me, Trevor Lawrence is at least an NFL starter for 8 to 10 years. Even if he's an average one. Mac Jones, a few-year average starter, is the floor.
Kirk Cousins is the comparison everyone makes.
Yeah.
And the question is, do you think you could win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins?
No. When he got to Minnesota, the thought was, wow, they nearly made the Super Bowl with Case Keenum.
Yes.
Nick Foles just won the Super Bowl the year before.
Yeah.
Like, all right, maybe it's possible. And Cousins has been okay. I mean, they've won playoff appearance in 3 years. I think you got to constitute that as a failure for what Minnesota wanted to be.
Yeah.
With Kirk Cousins there. Mac Jones, I don't know. I don't see it long term as a good NFL starter. Fields, I think, could be a star. But the problem with him is, again, he has the Ohio State track record against him, which... Again, I don't want to hold it against him because he's different than those guys. He's different than Braxton Miller, ended up being a wide receiver in the NFL. He's different than Dwayne Haskins, who, in all honesty, if you watch Dwayne Haskins in college, you could see the alarm bells ringing immediately when you watch that guy play at Ohio State.
But how much better is he than those guys? Because they all looked great in college, too.
Fields has more ability than Haskins did. Haskins, to me, benefited more from that team just being loaded with talent. And look, even though I think Ryan Day is an elite college coach, he made a national championship game in his second full season. Urban Meyer is still one of the best college coaches of all time. And I know Day was the one who was coaching Haskins offensively, but it's still Urban Meyer in the head chair there. So this draft with the quarterbacks, we think we know what Trevor Lawrence is going to be, even though it's the most unexact science there is in sports, drafting a quarterback in the NFL draft. Heck, I thought Sam Darnold was going to be a great NFL quarterback, and now he's on stop too. I thought Josh Rosen was going to be much better than Josh Allen, and Josh Allen nearly wins the MVP in year three, and Josh Rosen is on team three. Team four now for Josh Rosen, with him being in San Francisco now.
And it's questionable whether he'll ever see a pro snap again, Josh Rosen. I mean,
especially with San Francisco trading up.
Yeah.
I thought that might have been a scenario with, well, if you think Josh Rosen has anything left in the tank, maybe you give him a whirl if you don't want Garoppolo there anymore. But that's not happening. Track record for Rosen, pretty bad anyway.
Oh, stinker.
Yeah. So
Dustin May just gave up his first run of the season.
Oh, man. Was it in the fifth?
Yeah, in the fifth inning.
Oh, so you may have to sweat a little bit if you have. And Dustin May's day is done.
And look, if you have the Dodgers run line or even the Dodgers period, it's bases loaded, one out for Colorado. This one's going to be a sweat.
Yeah, well, or Dodgers first five, you have to sweat all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Since you're in the top of the fifth in a 3-1 game. But back to this draft.
Yep.
You guys can fire the draft position props again. Fields' prop right now is 4.5.
Over.
I think that's an easy over.
Juice to the over.
Yeah, to the over. I think that's an easy bet on the over. I don't see
it.
Unless if someone trades to Atlanta at 4, thinking, all right, he's not getting to us and wherever we're picking. That's the only scenario where I see this undercashing, Matt.
I think he could be the dropper in the draft. I think he could literally drop to 9, 10, 11.
No, and again, multiple mocks have that.
There were plenty that were calling him 3 or 4 for a while. I think it could easily end up 9, 10, 11.
Matt, who do you think Atlanta takes at 4? Because
Pitt.
That, to me, is the correct pick.
Yeah.
Because with that offense, Matt Ryan still has something left in the tank.
And he is so good.
And Kyle Pitts, again, if it wasn't quarterback in this draft, which it's going to be, I would honestly take Kyle Pitts.
Might be the best overall player.
I would take Kyle Pitts basically over anyone, over Trevor Lawrence in this draft.
Yeah,
that's
Trevor
how good
Lawrence
he is.
So good.
That's how good Kyle Pitts is. By the way, Kyle Pitts' draft position is 5.5. Not bettable. I think that's the perfect number on Pitts at 5.5. Coming up next here on the Nightcap, our friend Johnny Avello. He's awake.
All right.
From DraftKings. We'll ask him about a partnership in Arizona for DK. That's next here on VSiN.